Well, welcome to Lent. I hope you've had a good first few days. Ash Wednesday, always such a popular day, although we had a little bit of weather, so the crowds were slightly lower than normal. But in the season of Lent, in this first Sunday of Lent, the church in her wisdom takes us back to the beginning of the scriptures, our first reading from the book of Genesis. Now, Genesis is it's an extraordinary book. And you have to put this book actually into its historical context, because this book is not only the Word of God, but it's an ancient piece of literature that was written and known alongside of other ancient pieces of literature that described the gods, the cosmos, humankind. Now, what's fascinating about the book of Genesis as a human origin story is that it was different from all of the other human origin stories of the pagan religions. All of the other pagan religions of the time spoke about the genesis of the world and the cosmos and the gods as realities that were always in chaos, gods that were always warring against each other, power that was already always being exerted upon man or man against the gods, things always in flux, in motion. But only in the ancient Jewish religion did the creation of the universe come about by way of peace and order, not by many gods, but by one God. And not a God who set himself up against in domination over mankind, but a God who set himself up in love and life and goodness towards his creation. So whenever we are listening to a story, especially from the creation story at the very beginning of the book of Genesis, it's a very unique story as it was written in history when it came about, when God inspired that, because it differed from anything else that would have been known to the ancient peoples. It would have been known to the early human communities. And so when we read the story of Adam and Eve, and especially when we read the story of the fall, there is no story like this story anywhere else. You won't find it. It is one of a kind. And it describes a God who, right, as I said, is not one who wants to dominate or destroy mankind, but to lift him up. And this is what makes, right, the fall of Adam and Eve so tragic. Not because it was caused by the gods, but because it was caused by man himself. And so when we begin the season of Lent, and in the first Sunday of Lent, we always go to the story that immediately comes after the baptism of Jesus, when he is driven out into the desert for 40 days. That 40 days in the desert, it's like Quentin Tarantino, who goes all the way back to the beginning, right? And he shows you again what's going on, but he shows you that first at the beginning of the movie and then unfolds it. And so here at the beginning of Jesus' movie, it's like he's going back, God's going back to replay for us something, and then he's going to come back to it later on. And he's going back to the Genesis scene. He's going back to the place where all the things went wrong to prove that Jesus can make it right. You know, the Christian theology says this, that when man fell, there were three kinds of separation that he experienced. This was what happened to him in his disobedience before God. He was separated from creation, he was separated from himself, and he was separated from God. So all the ways that man relates to the world around him, to all the ways that man relates to himself and to his fellow humans, and all the ways that man relates to his creator, these all suffered when man fell. Which is why, right, in that Genesis story, after the fall of Adam and Eve, what happens? Well, creation doesn't cooperate anymore. He gets to now produce fruit for himself in toil. And she gets to bring forth new creation in pain. And they're separated from each other, because the first thing they notice, right, after they eat of the apple, is that they're naked. Because before, what they were able to see was each other's souls. But their eyes were opened. It's a paradox. They were closed. The eyes were closed to the invisible reality so that the only thing that they could see now was what was on the surface and not what was invisibly underneath, giving life to what was visible. And so they were separated from seeing clearly who each other was, which is why they had to sow fig leaves. And they also were separated from God because they were thrown out of the garden. So Jesus, right, in this season of Lent, when we come into this in this place of preparation, knowing that Good Friday is approaching, our salvation is coming, and we are spending this time to prepare for that, we have to see what God is doing to undo what we've done. And how did God undo it? So read now the story of the temptation of Jesus and see how God is responding to the very ways in which Adam and Eve fell. Satan comes before Jesus and says, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become loaves of bread." He's tempting Jesus in the same way that he tempted Adam and Eve in relation to the world. He's saying to Jesus, "Position yourself in power against the world. Take authority over the things before you instead of receiving them from God as a gift." And Jesus says, "No, I will not position myself in power against the world to destroy it, because I am the Son of God and my Father provides for me." So Jesus comes to restore man to right relationship to the world around him. So then Satan takes Jesus up to the parapet of the temple and he says, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, because God will send his angels to help you." In other words, Satan is tempting Jesus in the same way that he tempted Adam and Eve to destroy his relationship to himself and to his fellow man. Throw yourself down. Position yourself in hatred against yourself. Do destruction to yourself. And what does Jesus say? "No, I am the Son of God. And because I am the Son of God, I am holy. And I don't do things to destroy what's holy because it comes from God. And we are to respect what God has made holy, most especially ourselves and our fellow man." So Jesus comes to restore man to right relationship, not only with the world around him, but right relationship to himself. So then Satan has nothing left but to go for the gusto. And he takes Jesus all the way up right to the highest mountain, and he says, "I will give you all of these if you worship me." Because, again, he is trying to tempt Jesus the same way he tempted Adam and Eve. Position yourself in disobedience against God. Destroy your relationship with God. And Jesus says, "No, I am the Son of God." To be the Son of God means to know that I live under the authority of a Father who loves me, who does not come to destroy me. And so by living in obedience, I actually live in such a way that I can receive his blessings. So Jesus comes to restore man not only to right relationship to the world, not only in right relationship to himself, but also in right relationship to God. And so when you're listening to this story, if you're in the first century, in the time of Jesus, and you're, the first several centuries, right, when the New Testament is being written and copied and distributed, and this story, not only the life of Jesus, but also in the early Christian communities, is being listened to, they're hearing this already in relationship to that Genesis story. And like all the light bulbs are going off and it's like, ah. Because it's extraordinarily beautiful. Think about this. All of the things that are wrong out there. Name one thing that's wrong that doesn't have to do with man putting himself against the world, man putting himself against himself and his fellow man, or man putting himself against God. Is there any evil in the world you can think of that doesn't have to do with one of those three things? You're not going to think about it because there is none. It covers everything. But where's the gem in this story? Here's the real gem about the story of the temptation of Jesus. How did Jesus actually defeat Satan? Did he have to defeat Satan by doing something only God can do? In other words, did Jesus have to use his divinity in order to be victorious? No. It was Jesus in his humanity that was able to respond and defeat evil. He didn't have to be God to not make stones into bread. It's not like an automatic thing. Yeah, I gotta cook dinner tonight. All right, kids, go get some stones from the garden. No, Jesus didn't have to be God to refuse to make stones into bread. He just had to say no as a man in his humanity. Jesus didn't have to be God to refuse to throw himself down from the temple. He was able to do that in his humanity. Jesus didn't have to be God in order to disobey his Father. He could be obedient in his humanity, which is glorious, right? Because it teaches you and me that Lent is you and I entering into what God has done in a way that we're able to do it, in a way that we're actually able to cooperate. So our Lenten practices, whatever those things may be, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, we know that, right? Prayer, right relationship with God. Fasting, right relationship with ourself. Almsgiving, right relationship with the world. Those are taken up into God's divine life and bring those very blessings upon us. And so may this day be an encouragement. Whatever your Lenten practice is going to be, mine this year is going to be praying the Stations of the Cross every day. It's so beautiful. Every time I pray it, I'm like, man, why don't I pray this more often? That's one thing I want to do this year, just to be able to have my heart focused on the Lord. But for whatever it is that that the Lord inspires of each of us, we have to know that we live out this very story in the life of Jesus. And that as it brought life to the world through Jesus' obedience, so also as we participate, life is also brought to us and then to the world around us. So Father, we just want to praise you this day. We just want to thank you for this season of Lent. And we just would ask for your blessing to be upon us as we begin this journey. Lord, that every way that you inspire our hearts to practice right relationship with you, with ourselves and each other and with the world, Lord, that you would give us the courage to remain steadfast in this season so that we may come to the finish line, not only of Good Friday, but of Easter Sunday, in the fullness of joy that no one can take away.